Hello, this is Peter Hill Explains, and I'm going to experiment actually just reading little sections from a school textbook. This is a Year 8 school textbook called Pearson Science, and I'm just going to have a go at reading it, giving a bit of explanation as I go. The general art is to get me used to reading and actually explaining and teaching science. I actually don't have the students here. But we're going to start at page 1, and we'll just do 1.1 and just work through a page. I'll have a listen back to it, get a bit of feedback from students and people overseas, see how things are going. So chapter 1 is working with scientific data. There's a picture of someone checking a laptop, and it has the motivation here. It says, have you ever wondered, or what's the difference between a mistake and an error? Now, this is interesting. Sorry, then I'm going to give you some comments over here. A mistake and error are pretty much the same in mathematics and in a lot of works of life, but in science it's a bit different. Mistakes is not following a procedure that you think you're following, whereas an error is following that procedure, whether it actually reveals the truth of nature. So an error is deviation from nature, where a mistake is a deception. You have deceived yourself or deceiving people. Or the next question is, why scientists take multiple measurements? How to run a fair test? Now, to run a fair test is, the way we introduce the idea of validity of data, or in a more advanced idea, it is the evidential significance of data, of the measurements or conclusions that you make. So those all go together. In the more advanced, the most advanced view, we look at numerical significance, which is reliability, and evidential significance, which is validity. And then educational significance, something that I've introduced. Now, there's a section here stating what the student should be able to do after completing the chapter. This very much relates to the New South Wales syllabus, and I'll read the points. After completing this chapter, the students should be able to propose the type of data that is needed, including first-hand and secondary data. So there's obviously two types of data they have to understand. Conduct a range of investigation types. Apply simple numerical procedures such as calculating means. Use scientific language and representations. Research information from a range of sources. Compare the reliability of gathered data with that from other sources. Now, that's going to be a bit difficult. Use a recognised method to acknowledge the sources of data. Record measurements accurately using appropriate units. I was going to say accurately without mistakes, but record the measurement accurately is not make mistakes in recording it, but the actual measurements themselves are not necessarily accurate. So accuracy refers to the closeness to the actual real value defined by nature. Use, construct, and analyse information from graphs, tables, other texts, and multimedia resources. Identify variables to be measured and controlled. A variable that you independent, dependent, and controlled variable. So an independent variable you actually change. The dependent is the result of what you change, and controlled are all the other variables that you keep the same. Describe safety and ethical guidelines. Assess the method used and identify improvements. An additional outline of the history of the pendulum motion studies in connection with timekeeping and setting standards of length. So these are all inside the actual syllabus. You can imagine here. So this is 1.1, this is what we'll do here, and his statement. Now, data is all the information and measurements that are collected by scientists from textbooks, encyclopedia, journals, and the internet, or from carrying out their own investigations. The First-hand data is collected from experiments, surveys and field works. Second-hand data comes from other sources such as the internet. Scientists collect data and organize it into tables and graphs. They analyze the data, draw conclusions from it, and write it all up so other scientists can understand it. I suppose I have a bit of difficulty with this in terms of that a measurement. So you start off with basic measurements, and when the measurement is has a unit associated, a time and a place, and it's associated with an object, it becomes data. That's my definition of data, and much more simple than that. So that is a measurement which is then can be traced back to a point in time in history into an object. That so when I get 10 degrees, that's some information, that's a measurement, but 10 degrees is the actual temperature of my ice cream that I had on Tuesday night, and I have a sore belly the next day. It could be that I've eaten off ice cream. So that's my definition of data. Well, let's see what they say here. Their heading, data, is a term given to all observations and measurements that can be used to describe something. Just in my agreement of it, it's used can be described. For example, you can be describe your personal data. This includes your height, your weight, your hair, skin, eye color, distinguishing features such as a scar, birthnight, or severely broken nose. When and where you were born, the names of your parents. Data on the parent in figure 1.1 would include its color and sex. It's got to be. It's data associated with that particular parent. Now they have types of data. Most of the data you'll find in measurements that are written as numbers with units attached to them. Okay, I suppose it's of a particular type of unit and it's quantified. This type of data is called quantitative data. Other data can only be described in words. This type of data is called qualitative data. And to take an example about Mount Kosciuszko in New South Wales, shown in this figure, the quantitative data includes its coordinates, its height, and the average temperature, -6 degrees in July, 22 degrees in January. That's quantitative data. Qualitative data includes the Aboriginal name, Tar Gangili, the rock type granite. Right, so it would be actually quantitative if you said the quantity or the type of granite. I suppose this is animals that live there, so wombats, spotted quoll, etc. Wildfires found. I think qualitative would be more descriptive data. So the Aboriginal name could be quantitative if you wanted to say the amount of letters in an Aboriginal name. So I disagree there a little bit, but this is the problem of being a scientist. Data can be classified according to where you obtain it from. First-hand data is data you or your practical team personally find out by running your own experiments. Any measurements that you take are called first-hand data. That's reasonably right, and it's really important that when you measure something, you write it down in your lab book. And if you were to copy it off someone else's lab book, you should actually write down copied from so-and-so. Second-hand data, or secondary data, is data that comes from work of other people. Second-hand data includes measurements and information that you find from the internet, TV, DVD, and video, encyclopedias and textbooks and newspapers and magazines. Second-hand data can be obtained by interviewing experts. Okay, collecting your own data. So if you collect your own data, which is your first-hand data, you can generally trust first-hand data since you collected it yourself from experiments that you ran. If the data is wrong, then it's probably because you made a mistake. What? Okay. Mistakes are things that can be avoided if you take a little bit more care. I'd say a mistake is being deceived about a procedure. You set up a procedure. That's a mistake if you don't do it. Mistakes happen whenever you spill material, use the wrong equipment, or the right equipment wrongly, or wrongly read an instrument, or incorrectly write or copy a measurement down. All are obvious mistakes, since all are careless and can easily be avoided. Well, yes, I think you can be very careful, but actually do something which is actually not the actual procedures. Errors are not mistakes. Errors are small, unavoidable variation changes that naturally occur in measurements. Errors will always happen no matter how careful you are. This means that nothing is exact. Even accurate measurements have small variations in error of them. So accuracy refers to the true value of nature. So if you could count the number of atoms in an object and add it up, you'd know their mass exactly. And so your measurements will be have a certain distance from this absolute value. That's accurate. An error, indeed, is that's getting into it. An error is the distance of a particular measurement from the accurate value. Some common forms of error are, and they go into this, parallax error. Your eye can never be exactly over the measuring device. Everyone looks at a marking at slightly different angles, so everyone will take slightly different readings. This is shown in this figure, and so you actually have to have the picture here. So parallax is the actual measuring device sitting ahead or behind the actual indicator, so you can read it off incorrectly. Here's some things. Science filed information near disastrous mistake. In 2009, an Airbus A340 500 jet was taking off from Melbourne with 275 people on board bound to Dubai. It ran out of the runway, scraped its undercarriage, shattered the landing light, and only just missed the boundary fence. It's suspected that the pilot mistakenly entered a wrong number into the board computer, making the plane think that it was 100 tons lighter than it really was. Okay, so that is a mistake. There's a deception going on there. Or the it could also be a error in the scientific terms, in that the instruments were just not calibrated correctly to work. Discovery by mistake. Mistakes and accidents is the second thing have led to some important scientific discoveries, including artificial sweetener, saccharin, the first antibiotic, penicillin, first plastic bakelite. Accidental discoveries have also changed the way we use products. Coca-Cola and Viagra both started off as relief for headaches, and microwave ovens started off as radar. Okay, I'll just be very careful using the word mistake there. Another type of error is parallax reading errors. A measurement often falls between the marking and measurements of the device, so you need to estimate your measurement. For example, shown a match which is 5.8 centimeters long. It's sitting there, and it's just the human ability to measure scales. I suppose it's important to teach students to read to as many decimal points as you can actually humanly get away with. They're instrument errors. Sometimes an instrument may be faulty and will never give the right reading. Some instruments give correct reading only at certain temperatures and give small errors if used at any other temperature. For example, a metal ruler expands when hot, pushing its markings further apart. And this, they show a match. Human reflex. Okay. A stopwatch typically reads 1/100th of a second. The best human reaction time is 1/10th of a second, so stopwatches are much more accurate than us. I suppose have a higher precision is what I would say. Everyone has a different reflex time, so everyone will measure time slightly differently using a stopwatch. So it's not, I suppose, the number contains that you get and contains your error. Zero errors. An instrument such as a bean balance, electronic balance, should read zero when nothing is placed on it. If it doesn't read zero, then everything you measure will be a little out, and all the measurements will have a zero error. Balances can usually be adjusted to read zero once or more. This is basic things that they're telling you. I've just got a very quick story of a mate of mine who broke my tape measure an expandable tape measure, cut it off, and re-fastened it on. So it was zeroed at 3 centimetres. So it took me a while because I'd measure things. I obviously wouldn't measure 3 centimetres, and everything was slightly wrong. So I went back after a while. It took me a while. I took another tape measure. It didn't have it there. So I went back, eventually saw it here. There was a section here called tear. When you tear a balance, you are resetting it to read zero when something like a beaker is placed on it. You can add material without having to worry about the mass of the beaker since it has already been subtracted from the total mass. So this is just basic skill builder, basic information that you need to go here. It's interesting here that they have the gram symbol right next to the number here. Now what in general happens is that there's supposed to be a space. There's a way of writing scientific symbols or writing. Improving first-hand data, errors always exist, and each person in the team will probably take a slightly different measurement of exactly the same quantity. No one is wrong unless they made a mistake, and everyone's measurement is correct. One easy way of improving the accuracy of your data is to repeat measurements. For example, each member of your practical team could take the same measurement so they can be compared and obviously obvious mistakes be eliminated. Once a collection of different measurements is taken, an average or mean can be obtained. Okay, they have a very strong idea of people making mistakes. Finding averages. To find an average, this is their method. Now, delete the highest and lower measurement. They are measurements most different from all the others, so that mistakes may have been made when taking them. Again, I think you really have to take a distribution here to see what's going on. So I'd be a bit dubious about doing that, but that's what this textbook says. Add the rest of the good measurements together, divide by how many good measurements were taken. So this will be told. There's another science inquiry thing. That's a skill builder. Internet reaction times. Do this. Use the keywords reflex tester or reaction time in your internet search engine to find an interactive game that measures it. Although most games involve detecting a change in colour of the web page, some shoot tranquilizer darts into sheep, while others play baseball. Try as many as you can to determine the average reaction time. And they want you to describe what happens and explain why you think it happened. They have a worked example here. They have a mouse that you've been measuring, and they've got a series of people. What is it? 6 measurements: 8.1, 8.4, 7.9, 8.2, 8.5. You get rid of the 7.9 and 12.9 due to this method, and that leads you to a greater method of doing it. So it's interesting that they've actually taught you how to do this. It's coming to the end of this section, so we're going rather quickly. So they have this method in here. It's not necessarily a scientific method. Normally you would say discuss the numerical significance and actually decide to do it rather than do it as a mechanical thing, but that's the way they've decided to teach people. A little give and take. It is useful to write measurements with an estimation of how big the error might be. Scientists allow a little give or take by showing a plus or minus, standing for plus or minus. Again, yes, when you do measure things, you should put a plus or minus so that you can actually give the numerical significance of a number. So when you measure something, you can say it's this, and it's most likely between these two values when you put in the worst case scenarios of your measurements and the best case scenarios of your measurements. Figure 1.18 shows the temperature of a thermometer. The exact temperature falls between the markings, and a little guesswork is needed to measure it. It looks as though it might be 27 degrees Celsius, but it could be a little higher or lower, perhaps as much as 1 degree. So you can, in this one, say plus or minus 1. Then they have worked examples. In previous worked example, 6 students measured the tail of a mouse. Present the measurement with a plus or minus error. So by plotting it out, you can get a plus or minus error. safety. And they go through this. Running an experiment can be dangerous. Every laboratory has a set of safety rules that must be followed. One common rule is shown in Figure 1.19. Other common rules for laboratories are: always follow instructions from your teacher. Move about the lab in a safe way. Do not run, push, or shove. I can say you basically, if you can use military discipline, get them moving by numbers. So it's one, close your books. Two, stand up, put in your chairs. Three, move to your stations. So there's basic military ways that you can do it. Always wear safety glasses when using chemicals. Unless instructed to do so by your teacher or lab technician, do not eat, taste, drink anything. Do not sniff anything in the lab. So you should be taught how to smell things. Always tell your teacher if you break something or if you're unsure about what to do. Okay. That's also put glassware up against the edge of the wall so it doesn't flick and go off. Turn on the tap before placing anything underneath it. So if you've got a tap, you should break it, observe a few drops, gear it up and get it running, then place something underneath it. Always tie back your long hair. If you leave a Bunsen burner, turn it for a visible safety flame. Again, I have questions on that. Only use matches to light Bunsen burners. That should be a small B, as far as I understand. Bunsen burner refers to the man. Do not use lighted scraps of paper. Always use tongs to pick up objects that have been heated. In general, if you can plan it, you allow heated things to cool down. So you know you've heated it, you can then organise your time. Hot plates, Bunsen burners, tripods and gauze mats remain hot for a long time. Allow them to cool down and packing away. Then they have a unit review here of 1.1, which I'll go through. Goes for a fair way. Remembering, understanding, applying, analysing, evaluating, creating and inquiring. We might go into that a little bit later, read through it, but for this, and then I've got a practical investigation which I could read through, but I'm just going to put this on the internet and get some feedback from students to see whether they'd like to listen to this in podcasts on their way to school before actually attending a lesson, to see how that works. Bye for now, and thanks for listening.